Chapter 4 Organizations and Management from a Systems Perspective. What is a systems perspective? The last chapter, which illustrated the similarities between a living organism and an organization, is essentially a systems perspective. That is, both living organisms and organizations can be conceptualized as a system. Hellriegel and Slocum describe a system in a similar manner, pages 55. A system is an association of interrelated and interdependent parts. The human body is a system with organs, muscles, bones, nerves, and a consciousness that links all the parts. An organization also is a system with many employees, teams, departments, and levels that are linked to achieve the organization's goals. It also is linked to suppliers, customers, shareholders, and regulatory agencies. This was a quote. It should be apparent from the above that this chapter is primarily dealing with complex systems, such as is found in the biological and social sciences. There are systems that are relatively simple, such as the systems that are studied in chemistry and physics, which will only be briefly discussed for comparison with complex systems. Thus, the systems viewpoint that is presented here applies to the complex entities, such as organizations. A definition of a systems viewpoint, which applies specifically to management theory, is found in the glossary of Hellriegel, D. and Slocum's book, pages 771, Management. Systems viewpoint, one of the five principal viewpoints of management. Solving problems by diagnosing them within a framework of inputs, transformation processes, outputs, and feedback. This was a quote. The factors mentioned in the above definition, inputs, transformation process, outputs, and feedback, will be discussed later in this chapter. However, first I will discuss a perspective on systems that is more general and detailed than is usually presented in a book on organizational behavior and management theory. The general systems perspective presented here does not only apply to organizations. It applies to many complex entities. I will start this discussion by defining the word system for this book as follows. A system is a set of interrelated components that work together in a unified way, as perceived by an observer studying the components. It is important to understand that this concept is based on the frame of reference of the individual studying the components that make up the system. That is, a system is defined by the individual that is studying or working with the set of components that appear to him to work together in a unified way. The examples in the following paragraph will clarify this idea. A manager working with a single isolated department of a large organization might define that department as a system. A top-level manager working with the entire organization might define the organization as the system. An individual studying the production of goods and services throughout the United States might define all organizations in America as one system. An environmentalist might define all the land in America and its contents, including production facilities, water resources, air, forests, wild animals, and humans, as one ecological system. A religious leader or humanitarian might define all human beings as one system. Thus, it should be apparent that each of the above hypothetical individuals will probably develop different values, goals, and solutions to problems, because each defined the system differently. Or perhaps, the values and goals influence the way people consciously or unconsciously define the system. Most likely both of the above alternatives are partly true, under various conditions. However, the primary idea is that the behavior, emotions, thinking and resulting conclusions of an individual might be influenced by the way he perceives the world in terms of systems. For example, an individual that defines all human beings as one system might be against military actions of any kind, because he will see the enemy as part of the same system that he and his countrymen comprise. Such an individual might be quite sensitive to the pain and suffering of others, because he sees himself and others as part of the same living system. It should be noted that physical and social scientists and similar intellectuals define systems intentionally to study and solve problems. However, most people from early childhood throughout life unconsciously or inadvertently define various entities as systems. A person that defines himself as an independent system might be less sensitive to the needs of others than an individual that defines a larger unit as a system, such as his family, neighborhood, country, or world. The individual that sees himself as an independent system might be more aggressive toward other people and society in general than an individual that sees himself as part of a larger system. Most people behave as if they conceptualize themselves and their family and or nation's society as one system. The values people hold determine the way they define the system, and the way they define the system reinforces their values and goals. The primary idea to keep in mind is that people in organizations can define the system differently. This might result in different values, goals, and views as far as problem solving and the operation of the organization is concerned. The above paragraph suggests another important term, which is subsystem. I am defining subsystem for this book as a system that is part of another system. Usually complex systems are made up of many smaller systems. These smaller systems are subsystems of the larger system. However, a subsystem is not always small. For example, the oceans, rivers and lakes can be thought of as a subsystem of the Earth's surface. The subsystem is larger than the remainder of the surface area of our planet. It is once again important to realize that a subsystem as applied to a specific entity is not an absolute. It is the result of the frame of reference of the observer who is studying the subsystems. One individual might define the subsystems comprising a larger system very differently than another. For example, a physician might define the organs of the body as subsystems, but a microbiologist might define each cell of the body as a subsystem. Whether a department or an organization is a system or subsystem is a matter of perspective. One individual might see all organizations as subsystems of the world production system. Another individual might see the organization as the system and its departments as subsystems. And still another individual might see each employee as a subsystem of the department and/or organization. The idea is to realize that the concepts of system and subsystem are the result of a frame of reference. The system and subsystem should be defined in such a way that it facilitates the objective that you are trying to obtain. If you are managing or studying an entire organization, it might be efficient to define the organization, its customers and suppliers as one system. If you are managing or studying a small isolated department in a large organization, defining the department as a system and the employees as subsystems might be the most useful perspective. In such a case, the larger organization might be defined as the external environment of the system, the department. Systems exist in an external environment. The external environment is everything that is external to the system and is potentially relevant to the functional and dysfunctional aspects of the system. The system's external environment is also a matter of perspective to some extent. An organization exists in a specific geographic area, which is its physical environment. However, the organization might also have other relevant external environments, such as the geographic areas where it sells its goods or services. The locations and surrounding areas where its suppliers, consumers and competitors exist can also be considered the external environment of the organization. Such environments can be just outside of the gates of the organization's headquarters or hundreds or even thousands of miles away. Systems also have internal environments. This is perhaps obvious, especially if we examine a living organism or an organization. The internal environment is essentially covered by a real or imaginary enclosure, where the internal dynamics of the system take place. The preceding two paragraphs suggest another concept. Systems carry out internal and external behaviors. Internal behavior is any behavior that takes place in the internal environment of the system. For example, the heart of the human body displays an internal behavior pattern that is involved with the pumping of blood. Another example is the internal thought processes that take place in the human mind. Examples of internal behavior involving organizations and management include meetings of the board of directors and the planning, organizing and controlling processes. Production of any product produced in a factory is still another example of internal behavior. External behavior is any behavior that the system performs in its external environment. Examples of external behavior involving organizations include marketing of products, public relations efforts, and employee recruitment efforts aimed at bringing in new workers to the organization. There are two basic types of systems, which are closed and opened. Closed systems do not display any significant external behavior and may or may not display significant internal behavior. I am defining a closed system as a system that has no relevant or significant exchange of information, matter or energy with the external environment or with any other system. The concept of the closed system has little, if any, relevance to management theory or organizational behavior. The reason for this is organizations almost always have significant exchanges of information, matter and/or energy from the external environment, which is an open system. Since truly closed systems are generally not relevant to management theory or organizational behavior, I will use the word system to mean open system in this book. Perhaps one can make an argument that open systems can vary in the degree of openness. That is, some systems exchange a relatively small amount of matter, energy and/or information with the external environment. Such systems maintain their internal structure with only a moderate dependence on the external environment. Other systems are just the opposite of the above, and they may change dramatically as a result of small variations in their environment. In general, the more open a system is, the more it is likely to be affected by changes in its environment, and the more closed a system is, the less likely it is to be affected by its environment. The above idea can be applied to organizations. Some organizations are simply more dependent on obtaining raw materials, new workers, and energy from their environment, which can be thought of as a highly open system. An organization that is less open, by definition, may have less worker turnover, may own its own sources of raw materials, and may even produce some or all of its own energy. At this point, it probably becomes apparent from the previous two paragraphs that some systems are more stable than others. Stable systems tend to maintain their structures in a high degree of order and functionality, as the concept is defined for this book. Unstable systems tend to fall into a state of disorder, a state of dysfunction, which is true by definition. The relative degree of stability of a system can be the result of its internal structure and/or its environment. For example, all of the following will increase the probability that an organization is stable: organizational members, managers, workers, and other relevant individuals that interact in a harmonious way. Good management. Good budgeting. Good marketing strategies. Appropriate technologies of high quality. Good employees. Abundant financial resources. An adequate supply of needed raw materials at relatively low prices. An adequate supply of energy at relatively low cost. A product that is highly profitable. A product that is in demand. No threatening competition from other companies. And an environment that facilitates the well-being of the organization. Just the opposite will most likely increase the level of instability in most organizations. From the above paragraphs, it is apparent that systems have inputs and outputs, which can be information, energy, and matter, as the concepts are used in this book. For example, a living organism takes in food, which is used as a source of structural matter and energy, and releases outputs, waste products, waste energy, useful energy in the form of external work, and offspring. Most organizations take in information, matter in the form of raw materials and energy, and produce a product, which is the output. Also, most industrial organizations produce an undesirable output along with their product, such as gaseous, liquid, and solid waste products. Another concept is suggested from the above paragraph, which is transformation. That is, systems transform the input. For example, a steel production facility takes in iron ore and transforms it into steel, which is the product output it sells. Organizations also take in members and new employees and transform them into functioning components of the organizational system. I will add my own concept at this point. For systems to carry out the input, transformation, and output processes, they must have some method to guide them. That is, most complex systems have one or more programs guiding the input, transformation, and output process. Programs are essentially instructions stored in some type of mechanism, which allows the system to utilize the instructions. For example, a computer stores instructions in a magnetic form in the hard drive. Living organisms store programs in the form of chemical structures in the nucleus of cells, such as the genetic code in the form of DNA. Organizations store programs in many forms, such as in the minds of its employees, especially managers and engineers, on paper, in computers, etc. These programs include all the information needed to operate the organization, such as goals, plans, formal and informal rules, and technical production instructions. The above paragraphs define what I call a program system. That is, all living entities, including human beings, organizations, as well as societies, governments, and computers, are programmed systems. Some systems, such as living entities and organizations, are sensitive to their internal and external environments. They react to their environments in various ways. This sensitivity is related to a very important concept, which is feedback. What is feedback? Montana describes it on page 120 as information about job performance derived from the job itself that is used in a corrective manner. This was a quote how Regal and Slocum define it in terms of a system as follows, pages 762. Information about a system's status and performance. I am defining the term feedback for this book as information gained as a result of actions taken by a system, which can be used to correct deviations from a goal, set more realistic or desirable goals, increase the efficiency of obtaining a goal, avoidance of undesirable consequences, etc. Feedback often involves corrective cycles of trial and error. This can involve increasing a factor, waiting for the feedback, and then reducing the factor if it is in excess, then increasing it again if it is deficient, etc. The simplest example of feedback, which is very often used to explain this concept, is a thermostat that registers a preset temperature and turns off the heating system in response. When the temperature drops, the thermostat turns the heating system on once again, until the temperature rises to the preset level. However, this often used example is somewhat of an oversimplification of the process as it takes place in more complicated systems. Specifically, with animals, certain computer systems, and human beings and organizations, there is a learning process involved with the feedback. The following examples will clarify this idea. A child might learn as the result of feedback that certain behaviors often lead to punishment and other behaviors lead to rewards. The people that run an organization might learn through trial and error or through market research that certain marketing strategies are successful in specific market segments. They might also learn that certain strategies are counterproductive if used excessively, which can persuade them to use the strategy at an optimum level. In response to feedback, an organization might change its structure, its methods, its personnel, and its behavior. The organization might also modify or completely change its product in response to feedback. Thus, in some cases, the response to feedback can lead to the modification or change of the input, transformation process, and output of a system. However, sometimes complex systems, such as animals, people, and organizations, do not respond to certain aspects of highly relevant feedback. In other situations, the response to the feedback may be irrational or highly dysfunctional. Such a situation can put the system into disorder and lead to the destruction of the system, in some cases. A better understanding of the feedback process can probably reduce the chances of the above. Feedback, as it takes place in complex systems, such as organizations, can be described in terms of a four-step cycle. This involves 1. Taking an action, 2. Waiting for the result of the action, 3. Studying and analyzing the result of the action, and then 4. The next action taken may be modified in a way suggested by the feedback. There can be problems with all 4 of these steps. I will discuss the difficulties with steps 2 and 3 first, because it is most relevant to organizations, in the following 2 paragraphs. Steps 2: waiting for the result of the action, and 3: studying and analyzing the result of the action can often result in problems. In some cases, the waiting period needed to receive the results of the action, which is information, is too long to provide a satisfactory correction. In addition, in certain situations, it can take too long to study, analyze, and understand the feedback-related information to make a timely and satisfactory correction. For example, an organization involved in manufacturing might spend many millions in the production and marketing of a new product, and it might take many months before its managers find out that the product is not of significant interest to the consumer. The organization might have invested many millions in production facilities and produced a large quantity of the product before they obtained the bad news. If they received the feedback bad news at an earlier point in time, they would most likely have saved a considerable amount of money. A simpler example is an intoxicated driver. Such an individual will need more time to respond to the changing road conditions than a sober driver. Thus, the intoxicated driver might not have enough time to make adequate corrections, which can obviously result in serious accidents. Thus, the timing involved with the various components of a feedback cycle can be crucial. The above suggests that it may be advisable or necessary to consider the delays involved with obtaining feedback-related information. For example, a company can deal with this difficulty in relation to introducing a new product by doing market research, which will provide quick feedback, with a relatively small investment. Another method, which can be done after favorable market research, is to produce the product in relatively small quantities and sell it in representative markets. This method might not speed up the attainment of feedback-related information, but it will minimize any losses if the product is not in adequate demand. The possible problems with step 1 of the feedback cycle include the following. If step 1 taking an action is totally incorrect, the resulting feedback will generally not provide the information needed to make a correction. It will only indicate that an error has been made. For example, if a ship's captain makes a small error, which results in the ship being half a mile off course, feedback from land sightings will be adequate to make the needed corrections. However, if the ship is 2,000 miles off course, the feedback from land sightings will only indicate an error. Such feedback will not indicate how to correct the course of the ship. Feedback works best when the action is moderately incorrect or entirely correct. When the errors are extreme, other information, besides feedback, must be obtained to correct the errors, such as from experienced individuals, experts, computer programs, books, and/or experimentation. If we return to the hypothetical ship that is 2,000 miles off course, the information needed to make the course correction can come from a radio transmission from a navigation expert on shore. The difficulties associated with step 4, which is the next action taken may be modified in a way suggested by the feedback, includes the following. The corrective modification associated with step 4 might result in overcorrection. An example is a driver that drastically tries to avoid an obstacle on the right dies as a result of striking a stone wall on the left. Another problem that can manifest with step 4 is the corrective action can be more incorrect than the initial action, which can result from totally misinterpreting feedback or from an error in operating the corrective mechanism. The solution is to be aware of the potential errors associated with step 4 of the feedback cycle, and try to make every effort to avoid such errors. From the above paragraphs, it is probably obvious that feedback can be divided into two separate categories, internal and external. I am defining external feedback for this book as feedback that can be used to control external behavior of a system, such as the marketing efforts of an organization. I am defining internal feedback as feedback that can be used to control internal behavior of a system, such as managerial strategies used to plan, organize and control the efforts of employees within an organization. With complex systems, there is usually a considerable amount of internal and external feedback taking place simultaneously. This is obvious in both organisms and organizations. Another important systems idea is related to the internal pipelines of a system, which guides the flow of inputs, transformed products and outputs. That is, the various types of matter, energy and information, including feedback, are routed through structures to specific subsystems or sections of the system, where they are processed or used in various ways. This is apparent in living systems, where there are a huge number of such routes. For example, oxygen is taken in and carried through the bloodstream to each cell of the body. In complex organizations, as in living entities, there are a large number of routes for raw materials, energy, completed products, information, etc. As implied above, systems have specialized components that perform various functions. Examples are, in higher living organisms, the heart, liver, brain, eyes, etc. In organizations, the chief executive officer, board of directors, middle-level managers, the first-line managers, engineers, lower-level employees, various departments, computers, machinery that used to make the product, etc. An understanding of the subsystems and components and how they are connected is important in understanding the functioning and malfunctioning of a system. To understand the functioning of a system and/or to solve systems problems, it can be extremely helpful if a schematic diagram is drawn. Such a diagram can show all the relevant routes of the various types of matter, energy and information and what components they enter. On the diagram, the type of matter, energy and/or information involved and precisely where it enters a subsystem should be indicated. How it is transformed and where it is routed after it is transformed should also be indicated. Time intervals of the transformation process and the rate of flow can be indicated, such as 100 gallons a minute, 50 kilobytes per second, 1 client per hour, etc. This can also involve the rate of expenditures, costs and profits or losses, which can be represented in dollars per hour or similar units. The subsystems that carry out the transformation process can either be represented as smaller schematic diagrams showing internal routing, or as black boxes. However, if there is a specific problem with the subsystem, it is of course necessary to study the subsystem and draw a detailed schematic of its internal components and routes for the relevant matter, energy and information. If the system is a complex organization, and you are interacting with it as an employee, outside consultant, consumer, etc., it might be useful to include yourself in the schematic diagram, indicating your relative power position and the lines of communication that are available to you. The lines of communication and power position of other relevant individuals should also be included. If your lines of communication and your influence are not adequate to deal with the problem you are working with, try to create new lines of communication with relevant individuals. Finding influential people in the organization and developing a positive relationship with them can increase your influence in the system. Creating an accurate and detailed schematic diagram of a system, as suggested in the previous three paragraphs, is easier said than done. An organization can have many thousands of relevant components and routes for the transfer of information, energy and matter. A more practical solution might be to draw a schematic that is simplified and only includes the information needed to deal with a specific problem. Many of the components of a system, including internal and external feedback, can be quantified in mathematical terms, as indicated above. With simple systems, it is usually quite easy to create a reasonably accurate mathematical model of the system. Most systems, especially organizations, are complicated. These systems have many different types of inputs, transformations, and outputs. The user of mathematical models might find it necessary to simplify the problem or ignore factors that appear to be irrelevant. For example, a manufacturing organization can be thought of as a system that takes in raw materials at a certain rate, transforms the materials into a product at a certain rate, then markets the product at a certain rate, which hopefully results in an adequate rate of profit. The efficiency of the inputs, transformation, and outputs of the system might be evaluated in terms of money. This might include the percentage of profit made with a given investment of money in a specific period of time, such as in a year. This is the method banks use when they calculate interest, such as 5% per year. Mathematical systems models, in relation to industrial organizations, can also include the price of raw materials, the cost of transforming the materials into a product in terms of money, human labor, materials and energy. It can also involve multiple inputs such as how much energy and/or money is needed to transform the inputs into the desirable output. A risk with a system approach that involves simplified mathematical models is expressed by Montana in his discussion of operations research. Despite its success at solving complex production problems, operations research has been criticized for its focus on production and lack of focus on the worker and the human dimensions of the management function. Also, many problems in modern business, however complex, require an even wider perspective than that offered by an operations research system-wide approach, which often fails to account for unanticipated opportunity or environmental threats. Finally, operations management skills of analysis and solution determination are often viewed as operational skills, not management skills. There is often a gap between the technical expertise of the management scientist and that same scientist's managerial skills. Management science solutions to production problems, which make sense on paper and in computer printout, do not make the same sense on the factory floor. However, operations research has made and will continue to make a valuable contribution to management practices, and its techniques have been proven usefulness was a quote. The problems associated with mathematical models, which are usually simplified representations of very complicated realities, are they often lead to the neglect of highly relevant factors. A system that involves human beings, such as an organization, involves a large number of sociological, psychological, and biological factors, as well as production-related actions and economics. In addition, in the production process there can also be physics, chemistry, computer technology and other scientific disciplines involved. It is often extremely difficult or impossible to represent the first three factors mentioned in a meaningful and accurate way in a mathematical model. However, a system's representation of an organization and its problems can certainly involve more than the relatively simple components that can be easily represented by simplifying mathematical models. That is, it is certainly possible to conceptualize the organization and its problems in terms of a system that includes the sociological, psychological, and biological factors. Such a conceptualization may involve simplified mathematical models, but it also would include the more complicated human factors. Thus, a sophisticated systems perspective is a complex approach to understanding organizations and solving management problems. Montana and Charnov express this idea in their definition of systems thinking. Systems thinking, a contemporary and complex approach to problem solving that assumes that problems are complex and relate to a situation. That solutions not only solve the problem but will also impact on the rest of the organization. That solutions should be evaluated on how well they solve the problem intended results and how they affect the total organization unintended results. And that neither problems nor solutions remain constant, situations change, problems change, and new solutions are always needed. This was a quote. The above definition of systems thinking suggests two principles that relate to systems, which will be discussed below. An important principle is the tendency for each component of a system to affect other components of the system. This means that if one component is changed intentionally, inadvertently, or spontaneously in a system, there is a tendency for other components of the system to be affected. Systems essentially behave as if they are machines, and if you change a component in a machine, you would expect the entire operation of the machine to be affected. For example, if a person has a toothache, it may affect their job performance, their social interactions, their overall psychological state, and their overall health. Their physiology will be modified in certain ways to deal with the pain and infection in the tooth. If the change in a system is deliberate, it can affect other components of a system in unanticipated ways, in some cases. Often in an effort to solve a problem, modifications are made in the system that solves one problem and causes one or more new problems. The new problems that result can range in severity from insignificant to more severe than the original problem. For example, the hypothetical person mentioned above, with a toothache, might be relieved of the problem by having the tooth extracted. This might result in deterioration in appearance, difficulties in speaking, and related social and psychological problems. The more complicated the system is, the more difficult it is to anticipate the result of changing one factor on other components of the system. Organizations are probably the most complicated systems that exist, because they involve many subsystems, people, lines of communication, machines, and many other factors. Montana describes this principle in relation to subsystems of an organization as follows. Systems approach management science views an organization as a unified but complex system composed of interrelated subsystems. Systems theory states that the activity of any subsystem of an organization affects all other subsystems of the organization. This was a quote. In reality, a factor that may not be thought of as a subsystem can affect the operation of the entire system if it is changed. For example, if the illumination level in a factory is changed, it might affect production. It does not matter whether you conceptualize the illumination as a subsystem, but it is important to understand that changing it can affect the entire system. The precise way it affects production might be the result of simple visual dynamics and/or complex psychological and social dynamics. That is, the beliefs of the workers and the resulting psychological and/or social dynamics can be highly relevant components of the system. This was seen in the Hawthorne studies. Any change that takes place in an organization can have significant psychological and social impacts, which can affect the entire organization. Thus, an important consideration is what will the managers, workers, customers, stockholders, and the general public think of any change, and how will this affect the organization? Of course, changing a component of an organization does not automatically mean that it will affect the system in significant, meaningful, or measurable ways. The idea is that caution is necessary. It is necessary to try to anticipate the impact of a planned change on the entire system. Even with careful assessment, changing an organizational component can have unpredictable results. This suggests that experimentation might be highly advisable when faced with such uncertainties. Difficulty in precisely predicting the result of changing a component of a complex system is essentially a property of all intricate systems. Complex systems are often unpredictable. Simple systems are usually highly predictable, but organizations are highly complex entities. Another major idea is that systems and their environments have a tendency to change with time. This is obvious if we examine living organisms or organizations. As a result of the tendency for systems and their environments to change, problems and their solutions may also change with time. A solution that worked well in a specific system, at a specific point in time, may or may not work at another point in time, as a result of changes in the system or its environment. A factor that was not a problem at one point in time might become a problem at another point in time, as a result of time-related changes. Even a successful solution to a problem might eventually become a problem itself, as a result of a changing the system. Thus, it is important to remember methods and solutions that worked in a functional way for a complex system may be dysfunctional at a later point in time, or vice versa. Another property of complex systems is they tend to be unique entities. That is, they are usually one of a kind. This becomes obvious when we look at human beings, which are extremely complicated systems. When we look at the organizations human beings create, we can see that these larger systems are essentially one of a kind as a result of the uniqueness of complex systems. A methodology, technology, philosophy, solution, or anything else that is functional for one system may or may not be functional for another system. What works for one system may not work for another system, even if the systems appear to be similar. Of course, this is not always the case, but it is necessary to understand this principle when dealing with complex systems, such as organizations. The ideas presented in the above paragraph suggest that the accepted or preferred management strategies and techniques will not work in all organizations or with all employees. Thus, formal experimentation, informal trial and error, and sensitivity to feedback are necessary when applying management theories and methodologies to an organization. This is especially the case when managing an unfamiliar cultural group, or when applying organizational principles to an organization functioning in an unfamiliar cultural environment. It is interesting to note that simple systems tend to be highly predictable. In general, the simpler the system, the more predictable it is, and vice versa. The systems that physicists and chemists work with are good examples of simple systems. They are extremely predictable. However, when such systems contain only a few molecules or atoms, they are unpredictable. What appears to make systems predictable are a large number of similar components, such as many trillions of molecules of the same type. That is, a statistical averaging process takes place as a result of a huge number of similar components, which results in predictability. The statistical averaging does not take place to a significant level when a system does not have a large number of identical components. Molecular systems containing only a few particles and organizations do not have a huge number of identical components, so the statistical averaging does not take place to the same extent that it occurs in the highly predictable systems. Systems can also be predictable as a result of the precise arrangements of components in a structure or force field that does not allow any random motion of its components. Such systems can be extremely predictable even if they only have a few components. Examples are the solar system, a clock, most electrical devices, gasoline engines, etc. Of course, organizations do not fall into this category, because they involve a structure and environment that involves human beings. People each have their own desires and goals independent of the organization, and thus display relatively random behavior from the perspective of the organizational system. Perhaps an organization will be more predictable and stable if it has good employees and many consumers that are predictable, and if it is functioning in a stable environment. This suggests ways of making an organization more stable, but of course it could never become as predictable as the solar system or an electric clock. Another tendency of many types of systems is they grow or become smaller with time. This is especially apparent with organisms and organizations. The growth process involves taking in additional components inputs and adding it to the already existing structure of the system. This process can happen in a functional or dysfunctional way. Some examples are as follows. An animal might increase its muscle mass and become stronger and healthier, or it might increase its mass as a result of a cancerous tumor. An organization can grow and become more profitable, or it can go into debt and even bankruptcy as a result of dysfunctional growth. The same general principle of functionality and dysfunctionality applies when a system becomes smaller. When a system becomes smaller, components are removed from the structure. This can happen in an orderly, functional and constructive way, or in a disorderly, dysfunctional and destructive way. An example involving functionality is seen when an organization becomes more profitable as a result of eliminating unneeded employees, unprofitable divisions or products that are not profitable. An example of dysfunctionality is when an organization becomes smaller and less profitable as a result of losing its market share, losing good employees, and when downsizing is done in a dysfunctional way. A general principle related to dysfunctionality of complex systems becomes obvious if we examine living entities. Plants, animals, and human beings tend to get sick. Sooner or later, an internal structure, subsystem, or programming mechanism malfunctions. Some of these system sicknesses are analogous to physical illness and relate primarily to structural components. However, some of these sicknesses primarily relate to the behavior of the system and are analogous to mental illness. A system sickness can put the entire system in a state of disorder, which may cause further structural breakdowns and/or dysfunctional behavior. This phenomenon can be seen in most, if not all, complex systems, including organizations. That is, organizations in effect can get sick. One or more components of an organization can dysfunction, and/or its behavior can be dysfunctional. Some general examples relate to dysfunctions or breakdowns of the following subsystems of the organization: lines of communication, feedback mechanisms, programming mechanisms, machinery, inputs, etc. More specific examples of organizational sicknesses are: a chief executive officer or other high officials that lead the organization in a way that advances his own personal interests at the expense of the functionality of the organization. An organization that has dysfunctional goals that are partly or totally destructive to its long-term well-being. An organization that has functional goals, but behaves in ways that is inconsistent with achieving the goals. An organization that has a significant number of employees that behave in a way that is inconsistent with the well-being of the organization. An organization that is not sensitive to internal and/or external feedback. An organization that is not sensitive to market demands and is producing a product that is not profitable. An organization that is losing money because it is loyal to its employees and will not fire employees that are no longer needed. Thus, in conclusion, the systems perspective is one of many ways of viewing organizations and dealing with management problems. The following list of questions can help you use the systems perspective to understand and solve organizational problems. You should ignore the questions that are irrelevant to your problem, or you should modify the questions so they are relevant to your problem-solving efforts. You should also add questions to the list that relate specifically to the problem you are trying to solve. This list of questions should be used with the computer methodology described in Chapter 3. What would be the best conceptualization of the system in relation to your problem-solving efforts? Is the system you defined a subsystem of a larger system? What would be the most useful way to divide the system you define into subsystems in relation to your problem-solving efforts? What is the relevant external environment S of the system? Are there any problems with the external environment? Where are the consumers of the organization's product located? Where are the potential consumers of the organization's product located? Where are the suppliers located? What is the nature of the internal environment of the system? Are there any problems with the internal environment of the system? What are the relevant external behaviors of the system? What are the relevant internal behaviors of the system? Are there any problems with the external behaviors of the system, such as marketing, public relations, etc.? Are there any problems with the internal behaviors of the system? How open is the system you are studying? How dependent is the system on external environmental factors? To what extent does the system depend on its environment? How sensitive is the system to its internal environment? How sensitive is the system to its external environment? What is the nature of the internal and external feedback mechanisms in relation to the problem you are working on? What are the actions related to the feedback cycle? How long does it take to determine the results of the action? How long does it take to study the data obtained from the feedback? How can you use the feedback-related data to modify the actions of the system or subsystem so it is more functional and efficient? Are there any problems with any of the feedback mechanisms? Can the feedback mechanisms be improved? How is the system responding to the feedback? Is the system responding in a functional or dysfunctional way to the feedback? What information do you need to draw a good schematic of the system and its problems? Which system's components are involved with the problem? Would it be helpful to draw a schematic of the relevant or malfunctioning subsystems? Is it possible to create one or more mathematical models that represent the system or subsystem you are working with? Can you create such a model using costs, profits, and losses as units of measurement? Is there any way you can represent the sociological, psychological, or biological components with your mathematical model? How will the changes you are planning affect other subsystems or components of the organization? Are there likely to be any significant or meaningful effects on other components of the system if the planned changes are made? If a given factor changes or is removed from the system, how will it affect other components of the system? What is the relationship between the various subsystems of the organization? How does one subsystem affect the other subsystems in the organization? The above questions and the entire chapter can be summed up with the following 12 questions. If the 12 questions are answered in relation to a specific system, in written detail, the result will be a good description of the system you are studying. 1. What is the functional purpose of the system you defined? 2. How many subsystems are there in the system and what are their functions and problems? 3. What is the structure and dynamics of the internal environment of the system? 4. What is the nature of the membrane, barrier or outer structure that separates the system from its external environment? 5. What is the nature of the external environment of the system? 6. What is the nature of the internal feedback cycles of the system? 7. What is the nature of the external feedback cycles of the system? 8. What is the nature of the programming mechanism S and program S of the system? 9. What is the nature of the input S of the system, such as what type of matter, energy, and information into the system? 10. What is the nature of the transformation process S of the system, in relation to matter, energy, and information? 11. What is the nature of the output S of the system, such as what type of matter, energy, and information leave the system? 12. Is the system sick or healthy? Is it operating in a functional or dysfunctional way?